The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. As you know, this, or as some of you know, this radio healthcare clinic is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive health safety net with immediate impact to save lives and protect families. We make you a lay medical expert on your medical problems using interactive, dynamic education programs, including this radio program. And we know that hundreds are listening right now, like you. Feel free to not just listen, but also to pick up the phone and call and ask your question. All questions are good questions and serve as an opportunity to learn more about your medical issues as well as those of your loved ones and families and relative and neighbors and so forth. The other educational program we have is the fourth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. It is on March 21st of this year. It is free and it's going to be at the Tampa Convention Center. We are expecting now over 2,000 women, so register now. Seating is limited. The event itself has over 20 different medical topics, including, and I'm just going to run through them for you. If a particular topic is of interest to you, you can go online this afternoon and register. Cardiac disease, colon cancer, cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancer, nutrition and cancer prevention, graceful aging, progressive approach to wellness and non-invasive aesthetics, migraines and other headaches, fertility, menopause, bladder incontinence, what's new in plastic surgery. All those are in the morning. Those are morning sessions. In the afternoon, we have sessions on osteoporosis, sleep disorders, breast cancer, reversing dry eye, looking more youthful without anesthesia, skin cancer, diabetes, raising your adolescent child, allergies, and rapid recovery following breast augmentation. These are 20 different medical topics. If there are any that are of interest to you or your family or friends, please, now is the time to go online, focusonfemales.com, and off the homepage, there's a registration page, left-click that, go to it and register so you will get the reservation required to take advantage of this free opportunity. There also, we will also have there fitness classes, eight different types of fitness classes, as well as healthcare screenings and chair massage. So it's a wonderful opportunity. Don't miss it. Today, on today's clinic, we're going to be tackling sports medicine. And our focus, our primary focus will be women in sports medicine. But all you guys out there that are listening, do not hesitate to call and ask a question. We will respond and tackle every question that comes in on sports medicine. So even though it sounds like we may be talking about injuries, sports medicine injuries as related to women, we will entertain all questions and help you with your sports medicine question. So feel free, and I encourage you to take up the opportunity to do so. I am thrilled to have with me today my guest, Dr. Barry Craythorne, who I personally trust with my sports injury issues, including my shoulder as of a few months ago. And he is with us as today's guest expert. Barry, welcome.
Thank you, Steve, for inviting me here today.
Now, Dr. Craythorne received his undergraduate degree from Vanderbilt University. He graduated from the University of Miami School of Medicine and then completed his orthopedic residency at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. He went on to complete a fellowship training in sports medicine with Dr. James Andrews at the American Sports Medicine Institute in Birmingham, Alabama. Since coming to Tampa in 1994, Dr. Craythorne has been an orthopedic surgical consultant with multiple sports teams, including the Tampa Bay Rays, New York Yankees, Cincinnati Reds, the Outback Bowl, Tampa Bay Mutiny, NFL Europe, University of Tampa, and Robinson High School football. Barry is an assistant clinical professor of orthopedic surgery at the University of South Florida. He has authored several publications in sports medicine, and most recently in 2007 won the J. Crockett Farnell Award from the Tampa chapter of the National Football Foundation and Hall of Fame for his contribution to amateur football. Dr. Craythorne is board certified in orthopedic surgery and is a member of the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine as well as the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. Dr. Craythorne is presently chief of surgery at Memorial Hospital of Tampa, and his office is in Tampa, located in Hyde Park. More information, his website is www.cbcortho.com. That's cbcortho.com. Okay, well, we have a caller, Marla. Okay, Marla, you're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
And do you have a sports medicine, or have you had a sports medicine injury or question?
Yeah, actually, I have a sports medicine injury. In February, I was at a fitness practice for a obstacle course and was jumping hurdles, and I actually fell. I heard a snap and a pop, and when I got up, my knee was swollen, and it was really painful. So a friend of mine had suggested I go see Dr. Craythorne, and I went down to see him. We got an MRI, and it found out I had an ACL tear.
Okay. Well, this gives us a great opportunity to introduce ACL. Barry, what is an ACL?
Well, the ACL in the knee is one of two ligaments in the center of the knee that are X-shaped. That's why they're called cruciate ligaments. The anterior cruciate ligament functions to keep the lower bone in your knee, the tibia, from sliding forward on the upper bone in your knee, the femur. You need to have a functioning ACL to be able to cut, jump, pivot, or stop suddenly when running. And if your ACL is torn or not functioning properly, your knee may suddenly shift or give way while changing direction during running or landing from a jump. And this can lead to shearing of structures inside the knee, which can lead to injury.
Okay. Marla, take it from there.
After I went to go see Dr. Craythorne, he gave me the options of actually not repairing my ACL or having it repaired surgically. And because I wanted to be very active and involved in, a lot of athletics, I decided to go ahead and have it repaired.
Let me stop you there, Marla.
Uh-huh.
Barry, is there such a thing as severity or grade of tears, and does that impact the therapeutic decision making?
As far as severity or grade of tears, so many tears are complete. There are partial tears. We don't see them very often. And as far as the management of patients with tears, essentially, we look to see what is the activity level of that patient, what kind of sports or activities are they involved in. And in somebody who's involved in cutting or pivoting sports, Marla, as I remember, had been involved in running hurdles and boot camp and other things that require cutting, pivoting, jumping. For these patients, I recommend ACL reconstruction. There are other options for those who may be more sedentary of undergoing ACL bracing or non-operative rehabilitation. And finally, patients always have the observation have the option of simple observation of their condition or accepting their condition, although this does not have the best long-term outcome.
Now, Marla, how old did you say you were?
I'm 35.
All right, so you're very young and very active.
Yes.
And so you elected to go ahead with the surgery?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and why don't you share with us your experience?
Well, after the surgery, my knee was very swollen and sore, it took a lot of going to rehab to getting it back to where it was functioning well. And now I'm able, after I think my surgery was in February of this past year, have been able to compete in an obstacle course competition and pretty much have you can do anything I want with not very much pain at all.
Okay.
That's what I was going to say, Marla, it's good to see that you're doing well. You know, your case is a good example of a young, active, athletic female who sustained an ACL tear and who just didn't want to accept the uncertainty that comes with an unstable knee. I think also your story highlights how females can injure their ACL in the knee when landing from a jump. And we have new information now becoming available on training programs in which a female can do to lessen the risk of ACL tear, and we can also discuss some of these techniques with patients as they complete the post-op rehab following ACL reconstruction, again, to lessen the risk of injury to the operative knee and even to the other normal knee.
So the chances of injury to the fellow knee is greater in a person that has had an ACL tear in one?
Actually, not necessarily. Okay. I don't see recurrent injury in the operative knee frequently at all. But I think any patient, you know, after they've had this kind of injury, wants to know, how do I prevent this injury in the other knee?
And let's take the opportunity to go ahead and talk about some of the ways to prevent injury in the fellow knee.
Well, first, I think it's important to point out that females, again, have different reasons why they sustain ACL tears in comparison to males. One interesting point is, if you look at NCAA collegiate athletes, you know, females have a 2 times to 8 times increased incidence of ACL tears in comparison to male athletes. We've looked at the U.S. Naval Academy's experience, and female recruits will have up to a 9 times incidence of sustaining ACL tears compared to females doing required military training. As far as prevention of ACL tears, there's new information coming out in our orthopedic literature on these specific training programs which females can apply to reduce risk of ACL injury. Investigators have looked at how female athletes land from a jump, noting that females tend to land with their knees and hips straighter or in more extension than males, and that they are less likely to land on both feet. Both of these are actions that can make them more vulnerable to ACL injuries. It's been said that if you watch boys play basketball, you hear squeaking of shoes on the floor. With girls, you hear thumps. And I think we may need to train girls in sports to possibly mimic boys. When boys play sports, they more instinctively keep their hips and knees flexed and their upper bodies equally balanced over their lower extremities. These are positions that help protect them from ACL injury. And this has led to the development of ACL prevention strategies that focus on teaching girls how to land, cut, and stop with their hips and knees bent up on the front of their feet and with the body balanced over the lower extremities.
All right, and on that note, we'll be right back with more about how to prevent ACL tears in women on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness. Plus, begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And since we're talking about anterior cruciate ligament tears in sports medicine, I'd like to just briefly read something from the New England Journal of Medicine. This is an article November of last year, and it begins, the passage in 1972 of Title IX legislation, which guarantees equal access to athletic programs for both sexes at any high school or college receiving federal funds, has led to an exponential rise in the number of female participants in sports. Although this has resulted in many benefits, including the promotion of physical fitness and the fostering of team-building behavior, it has also led to an increase in sports-related injuries among female athletes, particularly tears in the anterior cruciate ligament. So is that commensurate with your experience, Barry? Do you think, now I know you probably was not practicing back in the 1970s, but is that your feel, is that the general feeling of the orthopedic community, that you're seeing more and more of women, you know, female injuries due to the increased number of participants in sports?
It's true, and in addition to that, we ask, you know, why are females more prone to these injuries, to ACL injuries? You know, and just a minute ago we mentioned how studies on how ACL injuries occur in female athletes, you know, have identified several factors. If you look at biomechanical analysis of jump landing as well as plant and cut maneuvers, these studies have shown differences between males and in females. And again, in short, females tend to land from a jump with their hips and knees straighter or in less flexion than males. Also, as some girls land from a jump, they may allow the knee to angle inward slightly into more of a knock-kneed position, which may put more stress on ligaments. There are other factors that may lead to ACL injuries more commonly in the female athlete, and these include differences in physical conditioning, muscular strength, neuromuscular control, and finally, things specific to the female, which include the alignment of their pelvis and lower extremity versus the male, increased ligamentous laxity in some females. And finally, some have questioned whether female hormones such as estrogen have an effect on the anterior cruciate ligament's strength.
So for someone who has a who has had a tear in one knee, then do you recommend that these individuals consider a training program to try and alter the way they land when jumping, assuming they're continuing to be active in sports?
I think that's going to be helpful for everybody. I mean, any athlete at any level, whether they're a recreational athlete exercising for fitness, a high school athlete possibly with aspirations for an NCAA scholarship, or even a collegiate athlete trying to maximize their level of performance. Nobody wants to be sidelined with an ACL tear. And I think it would be best if, for example, a video could be produced on these training techniques, which could be distributed to coaches, you know, parents, athletes, so we can get the word out, so we can educate and help prevent injury.
Now, having had an ACL tear affect your long-term risk of other disorders, such as premature osteoarthritis in that knee?
It does. Having had an ACL tear does give you an increased risk of osteoarthritis. The risk of osteoarthritis is less if you've had ACL reconstruction, but it's still there. And part of the reason is that as patients have injury of the ACL, 50% of the time they'll also have injury of other structures in the knee, such as the meniscus, which are the C-shaped shock absorbers in the knee, or the articular cartilage, which is the icing on the cake. It's the lining of the joint surface. And injuries to these structures can lead to osteoarthritis later in life.
So when you have a patient with an ACL tear, part of the evaluation is the neighboring structures to see if there's been any damage to those?
Yes.
And in Marla's case, did she have any damage to the neighboring structures with her injury?
I think Marla had a little bit of a lateral meniscus tear, if I remember. But otherwise, her joint surfaces were clean.
And if someone would have a lateral meniscus tear, would that also be could that also be repaired the same time the ACL is repaired?
We try to repair cartilage if it's repairable. Okay. I know that sounds redundant, but certain types of tears are more amenable to repair. Others do better with a quick trim.
Okay, so all right, so the menisci, those shock absorbers, are cartilage, and if they can be repaired, they are repaired, or perhaps in some cases trimmed instead.
Yes.
Okay, Marla, you may have learned something new about your case today.
No, I did.
All right. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask Dr. Craythorne?
No, I think I just want to get a hold of some of those training methods so this doesn't happen again.
Excellent. Okay. Barry, any last comments on her case or ACL tears
just
at this point?
In general, again, these training programs that are just becoming available and out there in our literature are quite helpful. One, for example, is a recent study that looked at a training program which was taught to 52 teams of high school female soccer players that used the program, and they were compared to other teams in the league that didn't, and they were followed over a two-year period of time, and they found that there was a five-fold reduction in ACL tears among the study group using the training program. So, yes, information is now coming out on ways in which we can reduce ACL tears, particularly in the female athlete.
Well, that's very exciting. And so I'd like to ask you, Barry, at what age can budding athletes begin these kinds of programs? Is it feasible to do it at the seventh grade level, or is that too early, or what do you think?
I mean, I think as girls and boys mature and reach puberty, that might be a chance where we have an opportunity to teach them some of these ways to not just jump and land from a jump, but to perform athletic activities in a way to minimize risk of future injury. And again, I think coaches are well suited to be able to learn this. And again, athletes themselves can gather this information.
Well, certainly prevention is the way to go, avoiding issues down the road. And so we'll be looking forward to these programs, hopefully enter our school system. Marla, anything else you'd like to...
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for your call.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. A couple other questions on ACLs. Barry, how does someone know that they might have injured their ACL?
Most commonly, a person will have felt a pop in the knee followed by sudden swelling over the first hour. The pain then subsides gradually with time. And later, patients with an ACL tear may experience episodes of instability in which they see or say that they felt their knee give out or give way. They may also experience mechanical symptoms such as catching or locking of the knee from associated cartilage injury.
Okay, and we'll be back shortly. We've got another caller on the line asking about sports injuries in children. We'll be back. We're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. The Israeli army says it has begun withdrawing troops from Gaza after ending its three-week military offensive there. Israel announcing a temporary ceasefire yesterday. The Hamas terrorist organization announced a one-week ceasefire today. Arab and European leaders, meantime, are holding a summit on ways to establish a lasting truce between the two sides. President-elect Barack Obama has taken some time in between inaugural festivities to remember the nation's war dead. He and Vice President-elect Joe Biden took part in a wreath-laying ceremony today at Arlington National Cemetery. Meanwhile, a top aide to Mr. Obama says the public should have confidence in his pick to head the U.S. Treasury Department despite his tax problems. David Axelrod tells CNN that Timothy Geithner made a common tax mistake. And he says when Americans get to know Geithner, they'll have the same confidence in him that the financial community presently does. This is SRN News.
Just 39 words will inaugurate a new president and a new era.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt,
do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
Join us for full coverage of the inauguration of the 44th president, Barack Obama, this Tuesday on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
She's a lady.
Kim Commando.
We talk about the camcorders and the digital cameras and the TVs and computers, and then we mix it all in this big old pot of goo, and we called it the Kim Commando Show because, after all, I am your lovely and talented host, America's beloved digital goddess, Kim Commando.
Kim Commando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on her new radio home in Tampa Bay. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. A couple of other points on ACL tears before we turn to Faith. Barry, you mentioned before about some of the symptoms of an ACL tear in the acute phase, the hearing a pop, a sharp pain, swelling over the first hour subsides. And you said also the pain can subside, but yet the injury is still there. How does someone know, you know, people may feel that if the pain has gone away, that they're doing swell. What do you have to say to these folks?
We'll occasionally see athletes, for example, a high school athlete in football who may have the ACL tear, feel the initial symptoms of pain, swelling, and as symptoms subside over the first 2 weeks, they will occasionally feel that maybe my knee is okay. But that knee then is at risk with a cutting maneuver or jump, cut, pivot. It's at risk for shearing. And again, for each episode of instability, there's increased risk of damage to the menisci or articular cartilage inside the knee.
So at what point does someone say, look, I need to go ahead and have my knee evaluated, even though it's feeling fine? Should someone wait a week? If they hear a pop in the knee, should they wait and see how things go, or should they? At what point should they go in and be evaluated for a possible tear?
In general, it's fairly clear when you have an injury, symptoms are sudden. The swelling is sudden. The pain is there. And generally, there's concern over what happened to my knee. And I would recommend that they would take care of it rather than just letting it pass and trying to let it get better. Mm. Those symptoms are significant and worthy of evaluation.
Okay. So a pop, swelling of the knee, you don't wait. You go in within a day or two to be evaluated?
In general, we like to add patients in like that quickly and can give you good advice.
Okay, good. And before we leave ACL tears, are there particular sports that have, you mentioned any sports with cutting, but you also mentioned here between the on the break that even skiing can cause an ACL tear.
Skiers can get ACL tears. They've looked at how that happens in skiing. Generally, if you go over a jump and land with your knee straight or in hyperextension, that can be one mechanism of getting an ACL tear. Again, other sports, basketball, for example, four times the likelihood that a female will get an ACL tear than men. So it's still very significant even today in 2009.
And, of course, basketball is an increasingly popular sport amongst females.
Yes.
Okay, on the line is Faith in Tampa, calling from Tampa. Faith, you're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Thanks for hanging in there with us.
Okay. I have two questions. One is a general question, and one is more specific. Okay. My grandson is 6.5 years old and is about to register with Little League. He is interested in becoming a pitcher. What is the correct way to teach him to pitch without doing harm to his arm?
Excellent question.
I wish you could speak a little bit about that, and then I'll give you a more specific question.
Okay, so on that first question,
yes.
I appreciate your question. I'm actually a member of the board of directors up in Little League up in Lutz in North Tampa, mm-hmm. and have had my two sons on baseball teams over a number of years. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's new information now out there regarding how to decrease risk of injury in throwers in baseball. And the first thing is that youngsters of that age should really just be trying to locate their fastball and not add in other pitches such as a curveball or other things like this. Certainly at that age, they even have a hard time gripping the ball with their smaller hands, so they would not be looking to throw a curveball. But in general, it is said that you should be old enough to shave to be old enough to consider using your curveball more frequently. So essentially, they should be looking to be able to locate their fastball. That should be, a four-seam fastball and using proper mechanics and hopefully a good coach or even people that are available today in Tampa to train can go through the basic mechanics of how to pitch to help minimize injury. And finally, the last point is that there are pitch counts that are developed to help minimize risk for injury, and they're based upon league level and age. And you'll probably find as your youngster goes into pitching, whichever level he's at, there will be already set pitch limits. And initially when they came through, I have to admit, they seemed a little bit of a hassle. A youngster is pitching well, doing well, seemingly having no problem. Suddenly he's reached his pitching limit. But I've noticed that there's been a decrease in injuries that I've been able to see, even in my own experience in baseball, after those pitching limits were initiated compared to before.
So you're saying then, Barry, that Little League has already incorporated limits on how many pitches a child can throw?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That's when playing a Little League game. What about other times when they're not actually in the team play and using the arm, like throwing with his father or doing other things? Is that wise to use the arm again, like during the week, in addition to playing the game?
Good question. You know, these pitching limits really have to do with pitches thrown in a game. They don't, so these things don't count. Training, practice, don't really count toward the pitching limits. The main thing you'll see also, aside from pitching limits in a game, is that the more pitches a youngster throws, the more mandated days off there are until his next pitching episode. And in general, a youngster should not be pitching more than twice in a week. And things to avoid also include multiple teams. When a youngster who may be good is on more than one team, it's difficult for one coach to know how much the other coach has thrown the youngster. These are just some basic things to know.
Now, Barry, tell me why, for example, let's say a child goes home and let's say his older brother or dad takes him out and has him also pitch. Why is it that it's not the same gravity or concern as the number of pitches in a game setting?
Well, in a game setting, in general, the player is really giving maximal effort, and it's you don't have the same possible period of rest between throws in a practice situation. You're just trying different techniques. You may not be giving the maximal effort, and you have a little bit more rest between throws. But so far, the pitching limits are just they just apply to the game situation.
I'm wondering, because since there's a lot of parents who tend to drive their kids pretty hard, is there a reference online or other places where parents can learn about what the appropriate pitch counts are for that age group in case they do take their son out and train him, you know, pretty rigorously in the backyard, for example?
Well, I think that at least at the local Little League level, those limits will be known as Little League sets policy.
Okay.
In other leagues, you know, AAU, Pony, there may not quite be the same standard of knowledge. There are websites, for example, the AOSSM website, the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine. A website can be accessed, and I think you would be able to find information, again, on how to reduce risk of injury in the young thrower.
Good. Faith, you had a more specific question as well.
Well, it's kind of answered. It was about throwing curveballs. If I understood the doctor correctly, he mentioned shaving. So you're saying about 15, 16?
It should be about 13, 14.
Okay.
You know, just it's got to do with the mechanism that the arm goes through as you throw that strong breaking ball or curveball.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of a karate chop, you know, method with the wrist and just with the positioning of the arm and the forces that the elbow goes through.
Mm-hmm.
At least the current thinking is that it's best to save that pitch for later on. And likewise, other pitches like sliders and what have you, they come on even later than the curveball, again, because of concern over the growth plates in the growing elbow.
And so with those other pitches then, Barry, it's important that the child be trained properly how to throw them and even have as strict, if not stricter, controls on the number of curves that they throw at that age?
I mean, I think, and also 13. Just, again, knowing proper mechanics, making sure they're throwing properly in general. This will help reduce injury.
Good. Okay, Faith, any other questions?
No, I just want to make sure I understand. So at 6.5, it's fine for him to learn to throw a fastball, and that's where it should kind of end at this point?
You'll see. There's a four-seam fastball,
okay.
A two-seam fastball, and even the changeup, these pitches are thrown just with a standard delivery. Mm-hmm. And the last point to make is for an athlete to be aware of pain in his body by chance. If he's going through throwing, he's pitching, he's mid-season, to admit that he has discomfort. It's always easier to treat early in the course rather than if a youngster has been withholding information. Sometimes in football, for example, you're taught to be tough and to be able to get through an injury. Well, in baseball, if you have some soreness about the elbow by chance or the shoulder by chance, it's good to just take a step back, ask why that is, and undergo the proper recovery.
Okay. All right. I thank you very much. This is a very interesting program.
Thanks, Faith.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. We have Holly on the line. Holly, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
And you are one of Dr. Craythorne's patients?
That's correct.
Hello, Holly.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Tell us about your sports medicine injury that you've had.
I was training for the Chicago Marathon and had some pain in my outer hip and actually in the groin area as well, and come to find out that it was a stress fracture.
Okay.
In the femoral neck.
Okay.
And so Dr. Craythorne had to actually do a pin surgery.
All right. Barry, how common is this type of... Well, let's go back and just ask the question, what's a stress fracture?
Well, in Holly's case, again, she was found to have a stress fracture. A stress fracture is a focal area of bone weakening due to repetitive stress. It does occur more commonly in females than males. And it's analogous somewhat to trying to bend and break a paperclip. If you take the paperclip and bend it once, you really can't break it. If you bend it back and forth over 100 cycles, at the 100th cycle, the paperclip may break with very little energy needed to do so. And stress fractures generally are the result of increasing either the amount or the intensity of an athletic activity too rapidly. There are other examples where stress fractures can be caused by the impact of an unfamiliar surface, such as a tennis player who has switched surfaces from soft clay court to a hard court, or by use of improper equipment, such as a runner using worn or less flexible shoes, or finally, increased physical stress, such as a basketball player who has a substantial increase in playing time.
Hmm. That's interesting. Can you adapt your body to these new surfaces or new conditions to reduce your risk of stress fractures?
I mean, I think the key thing is to adapt gradually over time. I remember, mm-hmm. Holly, in your case, I believe you mentioned that I tend to over-exercise. And I remember you mentioned to me one time that you'd go on a 20-mile run, you know, notice a little bit of pain at the hip at the end of the run. The next day, after a 10-mile run, it really started bothering you. So Holly is
correct.
A very intense, you know, competitor. Certainly she came through, had surgery, had pinning of the stress fracture, and she did exceedingly well, you know, sprinting through her post-operative rehab program. Holly, it's been some time now. How is your hip feeling?
It's great. I'm running again, training for the Gasparilla half marathon right now, and it's been good.
That's nice.
I've had no issues.
You know what? I was just going to say that there are some times where certain female athletes can be at risk for stress fracture. In situations, for example, if they have disordered eating or if they have abnormal menstrual function, it's been shown that in very competitive athletes, they can train so hard that they can lose the monthly menstrual cycle. And if that happens over 3 months in a row, that's called secondary amenorrhea. We found that causes a low estrogen state that can lead to a relative premature osteoporosis. Holly, in your case, do you remember, did you ever have any effect of your training on menstrual cycle or no?
No, I didn't. Actually, I never noticed that. I had read about that, but I never experienced that myself.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Holly, how old are you?
35.
Okay.
This happened about a year and a half ago, so it's 33, I think, at the time.
Had you had other orthopedic problems before?
I had the IT band problem and, you know, various, just, you know, less severe running injuries, I guess, but nothing that extreme.
And most of your athletics involvement is with marathon running or jogging running?
Yeah, although at the time I was also biking when I had the stress fracture. I was doing some long bike riding as well. So, but I think it was the running. I had done the Kiowa Island Marathon, and it was sort of starting, I think, after that, and I just kept running through it.
Barry, would biking increase the risk of a stress fracture? Or
actually, not necessarily. I think biking is a low impact, you know, aerobic activity, things that make athletes more susceptible to stress fractures can be the type of sport. We do see stress fractures in the humerus and throwing, that's the arm bone, in throwing sports. Occasionally, the ribs in golfing and rowing, the spine in gymnastics, and the lower extremity in track and field or running activities, and finally the foot in gymnastics, basketball, volleyball, and track and field. And here, the repetitive stress of the foot striking the ground can cause trauma, and without sufficient rest between workouts or competitions, an athlete can be at risk for developing stress fracture.
And we'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Holly, stay with us. Back in a flash.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
On October 9, 2007, most retirement accounts were doing just fine. The S&P 500, the Dow Jones, were at its peak. But a year later, most Americans have lost between 10 to 50% of their retirement accounts. In fact, many of you are currently receiving your fourth quarter statements, and those losses are now becoming a reality. So what are you waiting for? A Wall Street miracle? Good luck. These are the same people that got you into this mess. Hi, my name is Bill Wilson with the DeJohn Advisory Team here in Tampa. Our clients have not lost one dime in the recent stock market collapse. As a matter of fact, our clients that have made 10 to 25% 2 years ago still have all those gains. How? We locked in the gains. We do the same for you. We will even help you recover some of your current losses with a 10% cash bonus. $200,000 becomes $220,000, $500,000 becomes $550,000. If you want to sleep at night, reduce stress, and never become victimized by future downturns in the market, call 866-515-6669. For our free DVD called Retain Your Gains. Call 866-515-6669. That's 866-515-6669.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax-deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking with Barry Craythorne. Dr. Craythorne is a orthopedic surgeon and sports medicine expert. Barry, you mentioned about how stress fractures can occur throughout the entire body. Could you comment on the approach as far as treating stress fractures in general, and if there are particular locations which tend to require surgical repairs as opposed to observation?
All right. Well, most stress fractures occur in the lower extremities, lower leg, foot. Again, they are just due to the repetitive stress delivered locally to the bone. Surgery for a stress fracture is rather rare. Most stress fractures are low-risk injuries, unlikely to become a more serious fracture. Holly's fracture happened to be a high-risk injury, one which, if it were to fracture and displace, would become a more serious fracture. So in that situation, operative intervention was necessary.
So if it became displaced, then potentially it would permanently affect her gait, her ability to ambulate?
If it had become displaced, it can affect the blood supply to the femoral head. If that's disrupted, it can lead to avascular necrosis, and you don't want that at a young age.
And what would that mean?
You can't. If you have that, your training and your competitive days are through. That's essentially what happened to Bo Jackson,
the football player.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Holly, how did you have any idea what happened? What was wrong with your leg when you injured it?
No, I didn't. I tried to stop running, and I did see another doctor first, and they had just given me a script to do physical therapy, but I knew it was more severe than that.
What was your symptoms?
It was just a lot of a sharp pain in the inner thigh, groin area, but I could not really figure out exactly where the pain was. It was very hard to pinpoint, and I had gone to try to get a sports massage because that had helped me with other issues in the past, and I knew after that, when it didn't help, that there was something more severe, and I wasn't able to walk normally, putting pressure on it, and even after not running for a week or 10 days, it was just seemed to be getting worse.
And bad.
Errors, I would notice it.
And Barry, is that typical where an injury to the femoral head or a stress fracture in this case is hard to localize for the patient?
It can initially, early on in the genesis of a stress fracture, it can be difficult even to sometimes see on plain x-rays. Oftentimes 3 or 4 weeks later with another x-ray, you'll be able to see a little bit of healing happening about an otherwise invisible stress fracture. There are tests like bone scan, MRI, CT scan, which certainly are more specific for being able to pick up that kind of thing, but it's not that unusual to miss the stress fracture for a doctor on the first presentation.
And Holly, when was this injury sustained?
I believe it was 2 years ago, 2007, August of 2007.
Okay, and it sounds like you're back to your old self.
Yeah, I am. Just being a little smarter about the training and not overdoing it as much. Trying to cut back on some mileage and do a lot of strength training and boot classes and other things.
Well, I want to thank you, Holly. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running out of time. I want to thank Holly for being here and joining us. And in particular, I'd like to thank Dr. Barry Craythorne for bringing his expertise and sharing with us today. Barry, you want any last-minute comments?
Just that as we close, I feel that number one, females and female athletes are in particular really are more prone to develop certain musculoskeletal injuries than male athletes, that steps can be taken to prevent or reduce the likelihood of many of these conditions from occurring. To eliminate training errors and avoid overuse goes a long way toward prevention of many of the conditions discussed today. And finally, as new rehabilitative and training techniques become available, particularly in the arena of ACL injury prevention, our job as physician educators will be to get the word out, again, to instruct and coaches, parents, and athletes, and to educate.
All right. We'll see you next week on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.